Film Spotting is brought to you by PeerFlix. Trade DVDs online at peerflix.com/filmspotting. And also by the Honda Fit. The all-new Honda Fit is small on the outside, yet roomy and versatile on the inside. Check it out at fit.honda.com.
You're not interested in art?
No.
Then why do you want to talk about it?
I don't.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Sam Holgren.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Coming up on today's show, listener feedback, Massacre Theater, music by Jude, and a preview of this week's top five ensemble movies. But first, a huge cast with lots of recognizable names, and Lily Tomlin, it's got to be a Robert Altman movie. Our review of Altman's latest, A Prairie Home Companion.
Hello, everybody, on a Saturday night. Welcome to a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion.
A Prairie Home Companion. It was a live radio variety show. The kind that died 50 years ago, but somebody forgot to tell them until this night.
What are you writing?
Poem.
What's it about?
Suicide.
Oh.
If you've spent any time at the bottom end of the FM radio dial, you've probably come across Garrison Keillor's weekly radio show, A Prairie Home Companion. Keillor's two-hour variety show, broadcast live from the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota, features old-timey folk music, skits and jokes, and advertisements for non-existent products like Powder Milk Biscuits. Buy them ready-made in the big blue box with the picture of the biscuit on the cover. Prairie Home Companion has been on the air for nearly 30 years and has over 4 million weekly listeners. Now, director Robert Altman has made a film called A Prairie Home Companion, a fictitious, behind-the-scenes look at the show's final broadcast. An all-star cast portrays some of the show's most famous characters, including Kevin Kline as the inept and anachronistic Private Eye, Guy Noir, and John C. Reilly and Woody Harrelson as dim-witted singing cowboys, Dusty and Lefty. Throughout his career, Robert Altman has used large casts to investigate a particular segment of society, MASH's Korean War Field Hospital, Nashville's Music City, USA, the Players' scheming Hollywood denizens, Shortcut's Raymond Carver penned Los Angeles, and the upstairs-downstairs world of a 1930s-era British manor in 2001's Gosford Park. In Prairie Home Companion, Altman society is confined to the stage and backstage of a St. Paul, Minnesota theater. Adam, when compared to these more ambitious settings, is Keillor's radio program a world worthy of Altman's investigation?
Well, it's certainly true that if you look at Altman's body of work, there's a lot of satire there, certainly in the movies you just listed, which by definition means he's usually taking a shot at someone. There's got to be some target for the satire. You've got the upper crust in Gosford Park, Hollywood in The Player, and maybe just authority in general in the other films and throughout most of his films. And if there's any satire in this movie, A Prairie Home Companion, I missed it.
It's very, very gentle.
Yeah, and so maybe with that in mind, it does feel somewhat less important or at least less ambitious, but I will say not any less enjoyable. I have to admit, I've never spent any time at the bottom end of the FM dial, Sam. I've never
That's
heard...
That's my home, Adam Kempinar.
I've never heard Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion. I'm certainly familiar with it, but I mean, I've never actually listened to it. Not even a bit. I've never heard Garrison Keillor's voice until I watched this film. And I really am not probably any more inclined to start listening to the show on a regular basis, but I really did enjoy just about every moment of this movie. First of all, I think it's a perfect Robert Altman vehicle, obviously. You've got the multiple narrative threads converging in this one space, on stage, off stage, upstairs, downstairs, just like Gosford Park's upstairs, downstairs dichotomy. I think really this film perfectly lends itself to his signature overlapping dialogue, maybe even better than in Gosford Park, because those people were supposed to be characters and at least somewhat believable. And here, these people are storytellers. It feels more natural. It feels more organic to have the overlapping dialogue. But what I really enjoyed the most, Sam, and it hit me near the end of the film, and then it really crystallized for me actually during the end credits, was watching these people, these performers, perform. Mm-hmm. I really got to the point where at the end of the film, watching Woody Harrelson and John C. Reilly do this song called Bad Jokes. And the jokes are bad, but that's the idea. That's why it's called Bad Jokes. But they deliver it with such conviction, and they're having so much fun. And believe it or not, I actually thought of the movie United 93 at the end of this film. Because I was thinking about how Greengrass in that film, as we talked about, chose to cast no stars at all. Completely unrecognizable names for the most part. And I think he had a very good reason to do it. No individuals. Nobody that you can really identify with if you recognized a face. Here, I think that if Altman had cast just people from the Prairie Home series that I'm not right. familiar with, I would have had a good time. But I don't think I would have had nearly the good time I had watching Meryl Streep eat up every moment of getting to be the character that she was, right. and getting to sing, and getting to see John C. Reilly, as I mentioned, and Woody Harrelson. And Lily Tomlin is fantastic in it. And every character, even Kevin Kline, who I had as my number one comedic performance of all time, all time right. from A Fish Called Wanda, he here was a little bit of a revelation still. Sometimes you just forget how good he really is and how good some people can be until you see them in a role like this, and he's so deadpan. Mm-hmm. He really is. Even the physical humor is deadpan. And there are scenes of his that end up being really funny, despite the fact that on paper, I don't know that there's a joke there at all, but right. they end up working. So, you know, I really did enjoy this movie, maybe a little bit to my surprise, despite the fact that I like Altman.
No, I completely agree. I had a great time myself. And I know Altman's thing is, once he's cast a film, he's 90% done. That's mm-hmm. his sort of theory, his sort of maxim. And you have to admit, you have to, when you watch this film, you have to think, I don't know if Kevin Kline had more than two or three lines, really. And really, it's like, the business is up to you, Kevin Kline. And I liked Kevin Kline a lot, and I liked a lot of the performances in this. And I think I wasn't sure what to expect either. And I know what Garrison Keillor, in what he wants, I think he imagines, I read about this, he imagines a Wobegon, a Lake Wobegon movie, where we actually go to Lake Wobegon and we see these characters. And so I wasn't sure what quite to expect, because knowing going into this takes place at the Fitzgerald Theater, we weren't going to necessarily see Lake Wobegon characters, but in fact we do. It's really nice to see that there isn't really we don't see actors portraying these characters. They are the characters, mm-hmm. and you keep expecting them to wink a little too much, or at least to be acknowledging the fact that they're playing characters. But it's like I was constantly surprised by the warmth and the and just how much sincerity and how much love they have and affection they have for these characters, mm-hmm. and how much Keillor has for the characters. And I think you're right. I mean, you bring up this big difference between this and other sort of landmark Altman films, and it's the ambition of it. And this film isn't ambitious, and I don't think that's a flaw of it. It's just exactly what it is. If this film were to have the weight of ambition on it, I think it would sort of crush the whole spirit of the Prairie Home Companion mm-hmm. radio show. And yet what he does do is bring this sort of Paul of death, really, over the death of the radio show and of characters, uh-huh. Possibly in the character portrayed by Virginia Madsen, the Angel Asphodel. I think you do need that, and I agree. I don't think I'm all that inclined to really go and listen to the radio show, because otherwise it really is just sort of a light, fun, good time. You need a sort of finality. You need stakes that are raised, even in this sort of silly, fun atmosphere. You need there to be stakes involved mm-hmm. in these characters, and I think they solve the problem with that really, really well. You know, and if you were to just tell the story, or if Altman were just to tell the story of a regular taping of the show, it wouldn't be as interesting.
No.
That being said, the whole thing is enjoyable. You brought up John C. Reilly and Woody Harrelson, who just nailed this shot. And originally, somebody was telling me that he had Lyle Lovett and Tom Waits in mind
right.
to play those roles, but you can't imagine anyone better cast. These two guys who have perfectly embodied, you know, dim-wittedness time and time again, and they just brilliantly pull it off here. I mean, like you said, that bad joke song is just full of the kind of silly pleasure, it's just a really good time.
But again, because they're playing characters, they aren't really Dusty and Lefty, and I don't mean just the actors,
right.
but even those people in the movie that they're right. trying to inhabit are actually playing characters. They're putting on this persona
right.
that you realize that they're not actually as dim-witted as they come off. They're very smart. They know exactly right. what they're doing playing
right.
this role, and that's what makes it fun. And I mentioned how it crystallized for me how much I like this movie during the credits, because they close the show with this big finale of Red River Valley, and then during the credits they come back and they show us the song playing out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch it, you get the sense that it's finally a moment where the actors totally break down and are not playing the characters anymore. They're really being themselves. Lindsay Lohan, all the people
yeah.
up on stage, it starts to become a moment where they feel like maybe, I got the sense that it was maybe the last day of taping. You know, it
yeah,
was the
sure.
end of everything, and they just kind of let loose. I mean, you see off to the side John C. Reilly and Woody Harrelson acting like themselves, I think, and not their characters. I noticed a lot of moments like that. And again, that's where it really hit me that this has been the fun of it, is this is basically what you've been seeing the whole time, just
right.
a little brought down. You're not seeing Meryl Streep, but for the most part, that was really the joy of it for me. And, you know, one thing that occurred to me as well is I didn't feel bad about that. Like I said, I felt a little guilty afterwards thinking, well, if the only thing I enjoy is watching these actors who I really like and respect play these roles, is the movie really working?
Right.
And, you know, my justification was that if you notice, you never see the audience in this film.
Yeah,
other than maybe one shot where Virginia Madsen walks up into the balcony, you sort of see some characters and they're not even really having a good time. But otherwise, Altman never cuts to any shots, even though they're performing for an audience. He never cuts to them, shows them enjoying what they're doing. And that's because, of course, they're on the radio. They're playing to the people at home. They're not right. playing to the people there in the audience. And Altman does the same thing. So there's always this level of artifice, you know, where he's acknowledging that there's an audience here, and yet I'm going to completely disregard them, and I'm going to play to you at home. And right. I think with that in mind, then, I felt fine about the fact that that was the main joy I got from it.
But I also want to say, I mean, there is just a lot of silliness to the characters, and I think, you know, it's all part of, you know, Keeler's shtick and the whole shtick of the Prairie Home Companion is that they are gently satirizing the idea of what it is to be from the Midwest and sort of what ideals they hold to be so true and the sort of solemnity with which they live their lives and the way they even deal with tragedy in some way. Mm-hmm. And yet, even with the gentle prodding and satire of the whole tone, all of a sudden, and this is to Altman's credit and to Keeler's screenplay, I think, where all of a sudden you'll slip into a kind of pathos. You know, there is genuine pathos. Mm-hmm. He has a genuine feeling about these characters. I mean, you'll have a very silly banter between Lily Tomlin and Meryl Streep's characters, these sisters who were part of a once great gospel group, a 5-member group, and now it's down to 2. And we sort of learn the story of how they've, you know, been left at 2 and how they lost their parents, and it's all very sad. And it's very funny to hear the sort of overlapping dialogue. And then all of a sudden you'll get a sense of like when they did lose one of the members of their family or how there's lost love or something, and you'll suddenly feel very much for them. Mm-hmm. And what this film has is not just the pleasure of performance, but really the pleasure of having a history to the characters, and they all have relationships, and there's so much warmth to it that it really, there's a great pleasure in just watching it.
Yeah, there is. And another thing I really liked about it is that Altman's style of, again, that kind of overlapping dialogue and coming in a lot, if you notice, he does this in a lot of his films, and certainly here, he comes in the middle of conversations. Mm-hmm. He cuts back to people having a conversation that you didn't really necessarily hear the beginning of, and you may or may not hear the end of. And I realize that what it does, for me anyway, is it gives this kind of sense of movement. Things are always in transition. Something's always moving forward.
And the camera itself is always
accompanying that. You're absolutely right. And so there's always this sense of movement and transition, and it fits perfectly with kind of the whole theme of this movie. You know, we both listened to Altman on Elvis Mitchell's The Treatment, and he talked about death a lot, and certainly that's there. But one thing he never talked about in the interview that surprised me is just storytelling and the nature of it and the power of it, because stories always move forward. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Things are going to come to an end. These people are going to go away. They're going to die someday. This show is going to end. Everything's going to end, and yet a lot of these stories they're telling are going to live on and go on. And so it just matches perfectly. It's such a perfect meshing of Altman's style here. And again, I think it's better in that way than a film like Gosford Park. I really think this is a better film.
See, I don't agree necessarily, and I don't think it's necessarily Gosford Park's weight thematically in some way. I mean, it is dealing with slightly larger issues, even the fact life and death is certainly dealt with in Gosford Park as well. But I think, too, one of the pleasures, too, we talk about the pleasure of performance, and Altman mentions this on The Treatment as well. He talks about the fact that these are the performances they gave. There was no overdubs. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't go in. And he talks about this idea of capturing a perfect performance and that the fact that there's no such thing. And what you hear is Woody Harrelson singing. You hear John C. Reilly singing. You hear Meryl Streep singing. And that's how they sung it that mm-hmm. night. And that's how it is. And I think you get that sense, too. There, you cannot replace the feeling of performing live, whether it's in front of an audience we don't see or live for the radio.
No, I agree completely. And Lindsay Lohan, for example, she gets to sing. She's fine in the movie. Yeah. I don't think she's stellar, but she gets to the end. And she finally gets to sing. And yeah, she can hold a note, but she's really not a great singer.
No,
and you hear that, and it's fine. Yeah. It does work because she's supposed to be a neophyte. She's supposed to be someone singing really for the first time to a large audience. So it really works on that level. And lastly, I just want to say about Meryl Streep, too. One thing that Altman said in that, and I've seen that he's said in other places, is he knew Meryl Streep would do this because she'd jump at any chance
she
to, sing.
To sing.
And you know what? You just get that joy from her and her character throughout the entire film, and it really made it a lot of fun for me. So,
me too. I totally agree. All right. Well, if you've seen A Prairie Home Companion and agree or disagree with our takes, or if you have any other thoughts you'd like to share, please email us at feedback@filmspotting.net. We may not get a chance to respond, but we will definitely read your email.
After the break, your thoughts on The Breakup and this week's PeerFlix DVD winner. Plus, stick around for your chance to win a free DVD in Massacre Theater. Back in a moment.
Welcome to my world, won't you please? the only one to me. I just wanted to express myself to you. Hey, undiluted and with nobody else to confuse. See, I was Marvin Gaye and Bond, James Bond. I was taken all day so I could turn you on, and I hated when you look away when I was inside and slowly getting to it. It didn't help a lot when you would turn around and I was on the top and you would say, baby, you can do it. I'm sorry now and it's too late. I'm sorry now, do you have to hate me? I'm sorry now, so sorry, yeah. I wish you wish, I wish you love. I wish you wish, I wish you love.
Slater song. Yes. How's it going?
It's fixing to be a lot better, man.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Sam Hallgren. I'm Adam Kempinar. A scene we heard there from Dazed and Confused, out now, out last Tuesday, actually, in a special Criterion Collection edition. Yeah. And the winner of this week's PeerFlix DVD giveaway is Josh Nauman from Ventura, California. Congratulations, Josh. Look for your copy of Dazed and Confused in the mail soon, courtesy of PeerFlix. And Sam, I've been very jealous of several winners of this PeerFlix DVD giveaway each week, but this is the worst.
I know.
I mean, I'm insanely jealous about this one. In an effort to honor the truest DVD fans out there, PeerFlix has launched the Show Us Your DVDs contest. PeerFlix is searching for the shrine that best symbolizes a passion for DVDs. Just provide a photograph of your collection and explain a little bit about it. The grand prize is a 400-disc mega DVD changer and a free lifetime membership to PeerFlix. You do not need to be a member to enter. Learn more at blog.peerflix.com or in the notes for this show at filmspotting.net.
Sign up for a PeerFlix account between now and Monday, June 19th, and you'll be entered to win another one you might be jealous of.
Yeah.
Adam Kempinar, certainly your wife.
Mm-hmm.
The Princess Bride, Dread Pirate Edition, out on DVD this week, along with the splash ripoff Aquamarine, the new Jonathan Demme-directed concert film Neil Young, Heart of Gold, Val Kilmer, and Robert Downey Jr. in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, The World's Fastest Indian with Anthony Hopkins, and 16 Blocks with Bruce Willis and Mos Def, which we reviewed and tore apart, sadly, back on Film Spotting number 83.
That's true. And I did see Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and gave
it
a favorable review. Yeah. So if you're looking for something new on DVD, maybe that's one to check out. Donations time, Sam.
Yes.
We have to say our thank yous to a couple people who were so generous, of course. Silver Club members donated through the PayPal link on the filmspotting.net site, and they are.
Yeah, thanks to Mike One's a Party and Manuel the I and Team this week. Thanks so much.
The I and Team.
Mike One is a Party and Manuel the I and Team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Also, poll questions. We have to get into those. Last week, with A Prairie Home Companion coming up, we asked our listeners, if I see A Prairie Home Companion, it will be because...
Because I love Altman, I love public radio, I love Lindsay Lohan, or I just won't see it at all. And about 50% of our listeners who answered the poll are going to see Prairie Home Companion because they love Altman. Second to that, won't see it, aren't interested. Thirdly, love public radio, 17%. And 7% of you, 34 people... love Lindsay Lohan, unabashedly love her.
Well,
and we'll go see her in anything.
That's fine.
Doesn't matter if it's about the Love Bug or
whatever.
Harrison Keeler, doesn't matter.
They will go and see it. And I hope, Sam,
that
maybe some of that 28% that said they won't see it, maybe they heard our
review.
I
hope they change their minds.
Go check it out. Really, I know it's Garrison Keillor and it's A Prairie Home Companion and it's Midwestern.
Public radio, sure.
Maybe it sounds lame.
I'm telling you, and I think both
of
us, I didn't mention this, I think, in the review, but as much as familiar as I am with public radio, it's not a show I listen to either.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a show I listen to, and yet this not knowing anything about Garrison Keillor will not alienate you walking in here. Altman does a great job in terms of getting you up to speed on what it's all about without, you know.
Yeah. I agree. And I will say, too, I couldn't find the email, but I could have swore that one of our listeners said in an email that they would not go see this movie because they can't stand Garrison Keillor's voice.
Wow.
And I'm sure I read that. And
it's built for radio.
And then here I am going to the movie thinking, well, I'm curious if this is actually a voice that could turn some people off. And then I'm listening to it thinking, it's magic.
Come
What's
on.
The problem here?
Oh, I know.
Okay. This week's poll question, go to filmspotting.net, make your voice heard. Our next review, of course, Nacho Libre.
The biggest hit of the summer, you heard it here first.
You have to get off this hype train, Sam.
I've got some money in Vegas on this.
You're the conductor. So. You're pulling the whistle.
Get on the Nacho Libre train, yeah. Everyone.
I don't know why you're so excited about it.
I have no idea. It's not that I'm excited. I can feel the buzz all across America.
Okay. Well,
you can't feel it?
No, I can't.
All right.
This week's poll question. Nacho Libre is a collaboration between creators of Napoleon Dynamite, of course, the director, and School of Rock, which we have the writers.
Yes.
Mike White is involved in this as well. And Tenacious D, of course, Jack Black. Yeah. Why will you see Nacho Libre, Sam?
Because
the options are...
Pedro. Vote for Pedro. Rock. KG. Lucadors. And maybe it's greater than the sum of its parts. Or, finally... I'll pass.
And your vote is?
My vote is, actually, you know what? I haven't considered this. I guess possibly, you know, of all those things, biggest fan of Tenacious D. So I'll go see it for, although Jack Black's charm, I was tempted to ask, you know, Jack Black's act, is it tired or do you think it's hilarious?
That's a good question.
And the fact is, like, I'm on the fence with Jack Black now. I'm waiting for him to impress me again. It's not like I dislike him, but... After the magic of High Fidelity, I don't know. It's been kind of diminishing returns.
I agree with you. That would have been an interesting question. Could have followed up our Vince Vaughn question. Yeah. My vote, I went with Rock. I like KG as well and Tenacious D, but I think that School of Rock is maybe the reason I have the most excitement about this film is just having Mike White back and also, of course, the star, Jack Black. So go to the filmspotting.net site and vote in that poll question. We have a few notes before... We get into the mailbag, Sam.
Yeah, we do.
Before we really jump into the breakup discussion anyway, because we definitely had some disagreement about our review, some people who didn't like it as much as we did. But one interesting note we had to share. A while back on the show, of course, we ripped on Josh Lucas, the star of Glory Road and Poseidon and some other movies.
And then Josh Lucas wrote in.
Yes, he did.
Well, no, he didn't really.
Yeah, it was actually Andy Black, but we thought you suggested it might have been Josh Lucas's mom because it was so glowing.
He's the next Joaquin Phoenix, apparently.
Yeah, the favorable comments.
A Joaquin Phoenix like emergence. We're waiting for Josh Lucas here, yeah.
So Andy, he really was defending him so strongly that we thought it might be Josh Lucas's mom. And here we are now, Sam, an interesting email from Andy.
From Andy Black, who writes, "Guys, remember me, I'm Josh Lucas's mom. I just saw Glory Road, and now I hate Josh Lucas. What a piece of shit. And Lucas is about as believable as a basketball coach as your average basketball coach would be as a tanned, well-built Hollywood movie star. The movie was bad, but Lucas actually made it worse with his line readings and lack of charisma. He should have turned this one down. Now I don't like him either. Color me converted. Keep up the good work. Andy apparently is not getting his monthly paychecks from Josh Lucas anymore."
I guess not.
Wow.
How about that?
The tank is empty.
Quite a turn
of
events. Okay, so we had to share that one, an interesting email from Andy. And also we got a couple responses to last week's edition of The Dope Sheet, my overlooked DVD pick of the week. And I have to thank Kim in Austin for bringing up the Hal Hartley movie Trust, a movie I'm a huge fan of. But of course, it can't really be my overlooked DVD pick because it's not available on DVD. So it was
In
the United States. It was my overlooked VHS pick. And we got an email here from Shane and from a lot of people, actually. A number of people wrote in and said, "I just wanted to let you know, if you have a region-free DVD player, Trust is available in Australia and possibly other PAL territories and can be ordered online." And he sent me a link here. And as it turns out, I have ordered Trust. I do not have a region-free DVD player, but now I do,
yes,
Sam. I went out and bought one.
Yeah.
I bought one, and I'm just going to share a little secret. I'm not going to get into the details. If you all really want the details, email me, and I'll give them to you. But you can purchase a $35 DVD player. There's a certain model.
That plays all regions.
That plays all regions. Yeah. If you have this little hacker code that you can get online. So
and
if you want
host
the secret,
a twice-weekly podcast. I mean, that is, you actually do have to be the co-host of a podcast. So
in
that's
order to get it.
That's an important piece of information.
That's true.
Write.
But if you write in, you're curious what I'm talking about, there really is a $35 DVD player. I bought it, and I have Trust coming to me, and I'm looking forward to seeing it on DVD. So thanks to Shane and Ed and everyone who wrote in with that comment.
Yeah,
I never
Adam just
known.
Wants to get emails. I mean, who's not going to write about that? Come on.
I don't know. You know, maybe most people.
You're right.
Maybe most of our listeners, Sam, big DVD fans, they already know this. So, like, this is old news.
You're right, probably.
I'm into hacker codes for everything. You know, they hack into our podcast.
That's true.
And get enhanced features.
That's right. They get the director's commentary on the
more
podcast.
Outtakes is what the show needs. Also, in the dope sheet, we mentioned an email from our friend Matt Singer, who wrote in really asking us for help in his big cause. I mean, this is really an important cause right here. And what it is
this is the Jerry's Kids for Matt Singer.
It is. It is. Amazon.com is running this promotion with Warner Brothers where they've got like 30 titles and you vote on them. And then 10 of the titles that get the most votes are going to be released on DVD. So these are movies that have previously Warner's, for whatever reason, has not released. And one of the choices is the infamous Gymkhana. One of the movies that was part of our So Bad It's Good top five that we did. And also we memorialized that in our 100th show, played a clip from Matt, our comments about Gymkhana. So Gymkhana, you have to go to Amazon.com and vote for Gymkhana. We're on board with this, Sam.
Yeah, I've already signed up like five different times.
Exactly. So
we're going to make this
link
happen.
The link is amazon.com/DVD Decision 2006, but you can also get that link in the notes for this show if
we
you
need
go to
this is our, one of our first chances really to show and wield the power that is the film spotting listening base.
That's right.
And if we fail in this bid, I don't really know how that will reflect on me or the show.
It's true. If Gymkhana doesn't get a release,
there isn't a title on here that could, you know, invoke the kind of passion this title does. So
yeah,
it's time.
Parmistan,
it's time
everyone.
To do your part, everyone. We
Parmistan is the country. Okay, just think about that. How
the
can
country
you not,
made of cheese? It's
how
true.
Can you not want to watch a movie in which the main character has to infiltrate Parmistan?
An ex, U.S. Olympian.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay, well, let's get to Sam. Some good news and some bad news,
right.
And this is also something we mentioned in the dope sheet last week. So obviously, if you're not getting the dope sheet, you need to go and subscribe on our website because you're not getting the information as fast as
the dope,
other
right,
people
the straight
are.
Dope.
You are not getting the straight dope. Let's go ahead and start with the good news.
Yes.
The good news is, Sam, why don't you explain it? You got a phone call a couple of weeks ago from?
Yeah, from Chicago Public Radio, WBZ, Chicago Public Radio, inviting us to be a part of their Saturday night lineup. Starting on June 24th, you will be able to hear Film Spotting on public radio as nature intended it to be heard, really. And so, of course, incredibly exciting news. And it will be a monthly, the last Saturday of every month, or unless they decide after listening to this first podcast, you know, this first broadcast of Film Spotting on Chicago Public Radio, that's the first and the final
could be
one. But starting on, Saturday, June 24th, you will be able to hear Film Spotting on 91.5 Chicago Public Radio. And then again, at the last Saturday of every month following that. So incredibly exciting news.
It
was a really exciting call, and we're gonna put a show together that will be, you know, will be a BEZ show that we'll also be able to share with all of you.
Yeah, it will be a show specifically tailored towards WBEZ and Chicago Public Radio. You'll actually get that show as a podcast subscriber. You'll get it the Tuesday before it airs on the radio. So it doesn't mean a whole lot for you in terms of how is this changing things, except that you are going to hear a little bit of a different show, that it's going to be a four-segment show. There's going to be a few different segments that we haven't done on our current format. So look forward to that. Obviously, we're very excited to have this opportunity to sort of break into terrestrial radio and see how that goes, and obviously expose ourselves to a wide and a whole new big listener base. So we'll see how that goes. That's the exciting news, and we want to thank everyone who's already written in and congratulated us. We really do appreciate that. The bad news, though, Sam, however.
Well, it depends. I mean, we could phrase it as bad news. Yes, it's true.
We could.
It's just news.
Yeah, it is.
That's the way I see it. And it has a lot to do with the fact that we have been invited to take part on, you know, this exciting, you know, evolution of Film Spotting with public radio, which we realize is going to require quite a bit of work from us.
Yeah.
So.
It is. So what we've decided is we actually think that Film Spotting is better served if we go back to a one show a week format.
Right.
I'm wondering how that just went over with our audience.
Just a quick moment of silence.
Yeah.
Which I think it's been about a year.
It has.
I think it's just been just about a year. We've been doing two podcasts per week. We realized we got to the point where we had so much content, it made more sense to have two, 45-minute shows than one and a half hour show. And so, I think it was about a year ago we split off and did two shows a week.
That's right.
So now we'd like to go back. We're planning on going back starting the beginning of July. First week of July, we will go back to a single podcast.
However,
however,
you're not really going to miss anything. This is how we're trying to sell this to you. Listen, instead of eight shows a month, instead of eight, you're going to get five because you're going to get that special.
For the same low cost of $0.
Exactly.
That's right.
You're going to get that extra WBEZ edition. So you're going to get five instead of eight. And the shows are going to be an hour long instead of 45 minutes to 50 minutes. So you're still going to get the marathon movie segment every week and Massacre Theater and a top five and listener feedback and a movie review.
Marathon,
honestly, all you're going to not get is maybe a little bit of extra extra listener feedback, and you're not going to get maybe as much discussion about our 6 through 10.
Right.
We won't really have a 6 through 10 kind of preview segment, but we will probably mention the movies that missed our cut. So honestly, other than a little bit of extra listener feedback, which we do love, and it's regrettable that we're cutting it out of the show, but other than that, you're really not going to get anything less. You're going to get an hour show every Tuesday. And then, of course, that extra edition at the end of the month for WBEZ. So hopefully that isn't too much of a travesty. Of course, if you complain loud enough, we'll, of course, be wimps enough to probably go to keep doing two shows because that's how
Who knows?
Yeah. We have no spine.
We have absolutely no spine. But yeah, it's been a roller coaster here. We changed the name of the show just a matter of weeks ago, and now here we are. And I don't want to see it as a threat, threatening to lose a show, really. We're not losing any content. But
You're not on the whole. We think it will be better for the show. It'll give us more time to put more production into that weekly show. I think in the end, it will be better for everyone. We know that several of you are so behind anyway on shows. We're turning them out so fast, usually twice a week. But sometimes you're so behind, you're getting five or six caught up. Maybe this time you can actually, you know, kind of play along every week. So that's where we're at. We look forward to your feedback on that. We hope it isn't too
Our hands are covering our eyes.
Yeah. You
know,
exactly.
But yeah, but please, you know, I think we can all agree that it's a pretty exciting next stage in the development of film spotting. We're really excited about it. We hope you are too.
Yes. Okay. Why don't we go ahead and close out this segment? You just wanted to mention a brief note about the Atlanta Film Festival. You were just down in Atlanta.
I was just down in Atlanta over the past weekend, and I want to give a quick shout out to Brian Mann, a film spotting listener that works down at the Landmark Midtown Art Cinema, one of the venues for the Atlanta Film Festival. And I actually watched Prairie Home Companion with Brian, and we had a great conversation after it. But the Atlanta Film Festival kicked off June 9th, but goes through the 17th of June. So if you're in the Atlanta area, you have plenty of time to go check things out. I particularly want to point out a film, the one actually film, a narrative feature film that I got to see over the weekend, and it is Laura Smiles from director Jason Ruscio. Absolutely the single best female performance I've seen this year. An actress I had never seen before, Petra Wright as Laura. If anybody's listening in the listening audience has the power to hire actresses, get your eye on Petra Wright. She's absolutely incredible in this film. The film is so well written, so well directed. It's got one more showing in the festival Wednesday, June 15th. So if you're hearing the show Tuesday, tomorrow afternoon, you're in the Atlanta area, 5:15 at the Landmark Midtown Art Cinema.
Sam is now Mr. Movie Phone. If you've got
Midtown Art Cinema
feedback for us, send an email or short MP3 clip to feedback@filmspotting.net or leave us a voicemail by calling 206-203-CINNA. That's 206-203-2463. We'd love to hear from you. And I just want to make one other quick note. Because of the WBEZ show, we'd love to play more audio feedback during that version. It's the radio. It works better, of course, broadcast radio to maybe play feedback clips than to read the email. So if you have any thoughts on A Prairie Home Companion or our top five ensembles, which we're going to get to this week, and you want to send in a clip, if you have access to an MP3 recorder and you can record it, we'd love your audio feedback. Maybe more than in general. We call for it every week, but really this week, if you have thoughts on Prairie Home Companion or top five ensembles, please feel free to send them as audio clips.
When we come back, I'm not a steak. You can't just order me. Another round of Massacre Theater and a preview of Friday's top five ensemble movies. Stay with us.
Tortilla chips are on my lips, and no one's pressed against my hips. Bad beat, poet late at night. City gets bright, I can't see. The neon lights don't work on me. I am no watcher in the fight. Charlie says nobody's got the strange and hidden power, and no one is really beautiful. They're all just mediocre.
You okay?
I'm fine. I'm just fine. I took a antihistamine before, and it just makes for a nice little buzz.
Wow. I didn't know they let bad girls into these things.
Do I look like I don't belong here?
No. No, no. I'm sure you're a real ace at whatever it is that you do.
Damn straight.
But how you look.
I have a head for business and a bod for sin. Is there anything wrong with that?
No.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Adam Kempinar. I'm Sam Holgren. Time now for Massacre Theater. Last week, Adam and I massacred the scene you just heard from Working Girl with Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford, a tie-in with last week's top five chick flicks. Adam, reach into the Film Spotting hat and pick out this week's winner.
And the winner is Corey Attad from, I believe, Toronto.
He didn't include it, but I think he's written in
Corey,
before.
He's written in before. I think he's a Canadian anyway, so maybe Toronto. Congratulations, Corey. Email feedback@filmspotting.net, and we'll set you up with the DVD of your choice. And we did get a ton of emails again.
Yeah, furious at how easy it was.
They thought I made it too easy again, picking a scene from Working Girl, because the line, of course, the memorable line about a head for business and a body for sin, is in the trailer. But hey, we want people to enter the competition, guys. And it's funny too, because the actual number, if you do the math of people who enter Massacre Theater, even like Working Girl, popular ones like Working Girl and Saved and Garden State, is like 1% of our audience.
Based on all
of you out there that think this is just so easy, either the other 99%...
You're offending a huge portion
exactly.
of people.
Yeah, exactly. They're either just not getting these, or they're too lazy to write. So anyway, we'll see
how
it goes.
Or have better things to do, we should maybe say.
We'll see how it goes this week. I think we did manage to pick a scene this week, though, Sam, that is not in the trailer.
A little more obscure.
Right. Maybe a problem, though, that I probably picked the one scene that's the most memorable in the whole film. At least it is for me.
I knew it right away, which is usually a sign that it's easy.
All right. Well, let's give it a shot here and see how many angry emails we get about how easy it is. You kick it off. I will give you the action. And action.
It's down. So is the liner.
Yeah, it's really soft.
Get on.
Oh, no, no. I got to go help with dinner.
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Exactly. Individually wrapped springs. Top quality. I could do aerobics over here and you wouldn't feel it.
Bet I wouldn't.
So, would you say you're open to new things?
And scene. All right, if you know what film Sam and I just massacred, an ensemble movie tying in with our top five,
that's right.
Send an email by Monday, June 17th to feedback@filmspotting.net. The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced on next Tuesday's show. We do have our top five coming up, ensemble movies, tying in nicely with Altman, but we did want to get to just a few emails on the breakup. Before we do that, let's go ahead, Sam, and start with this one from Matt Summer.
Yeah, Matt Summer writes, "Hey guys, in regards to your discussion in episode 104 about how Hollywood is hoodwinking people by playing the breakup as romantic comedy, I just wanted to point out that the newest round of ads for the film are even worse. They are now touting the film as the number one romantic comedy and seem to have recut the TV spots to only show cutesy little romantic scenes, Vaughn and Aniston smiling, Aniston walking naked into the room, etc. Gone are even the scenes of the brother character beating the crap out of Vaughn that were so prominent in the earlier trailers. I suppose you can't argue with the success this movie had last weekend, but if the studios wanted a traditional romantic comedy, it seems like they could have made one instead of resorting to trailer trickery to fool people into attending."
Yeah, it's a good point. I haven't seen the new trailer, but I'm not surprised at all.
No,
and it's
me
funny,
neither.
I did hear Vince Vaughn on Mike and Mike in the Morning talking about the breakup, and he said that very clearly, as you mentioned, he had a story credit in this, and he definitely did with the writers. They set out to really make kind of a genre-busting film, a movie that took the romantic comedy and put it in a realm of reality, of what relationships are really like.
Right.
And I think, obviously, we thought they were successful. This one from Mitch in San Francisco. "Just wanted to leave a little feedback to your review of The Breakup. While I buy your arguments for liking the film, I had to say that I totally disagree with your review. Leaving aside the fact that you were both Vince Vaughn and now Peyton Reed apologists, I have to say that they both fell short of the film. I concede that I was let down by the marketing of this film as a comedy when I didn't even laugh once. Okay, maybe once. But my problem with the film is how it rushed right to the breakup and then proceeded to just pound the premise into my head over and over again. Are we really led to believe that these people who met, fell in love, and bought a condo together can just split up instantly? It just seems so implausible to me. I've been in breakups where the writing was on the wall, but it took a while until we finally split up, and some of those relationships were less than a year old with no real investments made. These two just split up in the beginning, and then the story takes off from there. Still love the show and can only hope our relationship can be saved."
Our relationship can be saved.
Sam, do you care to respond?
Well, it sounds like Mitch is bitter that he let these relationships linger long past, in his own life, long past the point of no return.
Maybe he's got some personal issues
there. It sounds, I mean, we did talk about this in the review, that, I mean, it reads solution to the fact that the film doesn't really include any of the loving part of the relationship, and his solution is this sort of long montage of snapshots, which, you know, last week on the show, I said, totally worked for me. I totally believe believe that there were a couple based on those. And if you don't buy it, yes, it's going to be very difficult to go on that ride with them.
I just want to say that I disagree with the premise of Mitch's email, because I totally got the sense that there were things festering in this relationship and that this was just kind of that everything culminating together.
Absolutely.
I completely
bought. This is not the first big fight.
Clearly. It can't be. So I got that sense. I disagree with Mitch. Before we move on, though, to the next email, I do want to mention, because Mitch is from San Francisco, I want to throw this out there in advance. I've been bad about mentioning these things with much warning, but I'm going to be in San Francisco the middle of July.
I didn't know that.
Yes, July 15th.
Okay.
July 15th through the 17th, I believe it is. I'm going to be out there, and I know we have a ton of listeners in San Francisco. I'm going to be out there with a few friends. We're taking in some baseball games. If anybody wants to get together, have a few beers, do a little San Francisco meetup, just send us an email.
And are you going to bring your old-timey shoe band as well and perform?
Maybe.
Live? Okay.
Okay.
I wasn't sure.
What are you talking about, Sam?
A reference to Prairie Home Companion.
Oh,
I didn't know if
I'm
you were going to do your old-timey music hour.
No.
Or if you were going to bring your friend Scott Smith along.
No, I'm not.
Well.
No, Scott Smith is not coming with me on this trip anyway.
All right.
Next weekend, we got a little cottage. It's going to be a lot of fun. But
nice.
Again, if you want any meetup details, feedback at filmspotting.net. And speaking of California, Sam, we got this one from Ben Waldorf in Santa Rosa, California,
who writes, "Perhaps it's a bit ironic that I came into episode 104 expecting you guys to hate the breakup and were pleasantly surprised by it. And I went into the breakup hesitantly and was also pleasantly surprised. I'm a little over Vince Vaughn, but he gives an actual performance here, which was a nice departure for him. Jennifer Aniston may not have the greatest acting range, but in the right roles, she's excellent, and she's perfectly cast here. Concerning the supporting roles, I thought there were simply too many of them, but they at least served a purpose as opposed to just being there for the sake of being there. I also found it incredibly amusing, as a huge Arrested Development fan, that Jason Bateman was playing a very similar character to the one he plays on the show. All in all, this was an insightful look at relationships, but on a broader level, it passed my litmus test. For good comedies, it was actually funny. What a concept, Ben Waldorf, Santa Rosa." Okay, let's have it out, Adam.
Let's have it out. After the show,
Jason Bateman.
I think later that night, I sent you an email and said, "Sam, we didn't get to this. Jason Bateman, thumbs up or thumbs down in this role."
Yeah, and I said, "Thumbs up, yo, he's a genius."
Yes, you did.
And you responded.
I wrote back and said, basically, you're dead wrong, that he was one of the really weak parts of the film for me, even though he's barely in it. You always talk about characters, actors who don't have a sense of humor, aren't self-deprecating enough, take themselves too seriously.
Yes.
He was only in this movie for like two scenes, and that's exactly what he was in every scene.
Perfectly delivered deadpan comedy. I asked you, too, if you'd ever seen Arrested Development. You're not really familiar with it at all.
No, I mean, I know what it is, and I've seen parts, and I'm not trying to say this is something about his work as a whole. I'm simply saying in this film, he talks so slow, he brought no energy to any scene.
It's perfect.
I thought he was too deadpan, if you will. It didn't work for me at all.
If in the future we get to do this as Massacre Theater, I will deliver it just as Bateman did, because it's exactly how it should be delivered. Perfect comic timing for Mr. Bateman.
Well now you have another reason to go see The Breakup.
Very divisive. Yeah,
which one of us is right?
He's in at least 45 seconds of the film.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would be fun anyway. We'd like to get your responses if you've seen it on the Jason Bateman debate. Let's get on then to our preview, Sam, of our top five this week, tying in with Altman, no-brainer. I think actually it was a listener suggestion a while back, even before Altman, but this was a perfect time. Top five ensemble movies.
Great top five.
It is a great top five, and I don't know that this one really needs much of a criteria. I mean, it's pretty much self-explanatory. Yep. An ensemble movie, it doesn't have a main star. You've got a huge cast. Did you have any specific criteria that you used?
I mean, other than another definition of ensembles, there was no single primary character, and I wrote that down because I did have one exception, of course, and it is Wonder Boys, which is my 6-10. It's a favorite film of mine, and yes, the bulk of the film, in fact, every scene has... you know, Michael Douglas as Grady Tripp, and yet the supporting cast is so strong and makes up what this film is about. I had to put it on there. It's a film I absolutely love.
Okay.
Robert Downey Jr., Frances McDormand, all so good.
That's why you're having them. They're spells.
Spells? Jesus, James, you make it sound like we're in a Tennessee Williams play. I don't get spells.
Rest of the 6-10. And do we want to mention the fact that we do have our memorial top five here? Should we wait?
I think we'll go ahead and save it for the actual top five.
All right, so the rest of my 6-10, I've got Beautiful People, a movie I think I mentioned on our top five films with a conscience way back, a great little British film that examines immigrant and family relationships in London during the Balkan conflict in the mid-90s. I've got two films here, a pairing, two films widely loathed by just about everybody but me. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I don't.
Well, Full Frontal, Soderbergh,
That's
a film
true.
I do like that everyone hates, his first sort of experiment with digital filmmaking, and also The Imposters, Stanley Tucci's homage to classic screwball comedies. Huge cast of these, and I was thinking about this, this movie contains just about every actor, character actor you want to be in every movie. Oliver Platt, Campbell Scott, Tucci himself, Lily Taylor, Hope Davis, Billy Connolly, Alfred Molina, Tony Shalhoub, Steve Buscemi, Woody Allen, Richard Jenkins, Isabella Rossellini, and Kenyon College alum Allison Janney. Unbelievable cast. Yeah. Hilarious movie. I've also got my requisite Altman pick. I had to throw at least one on there, and I'm putting Nashville on there. It's nearing
the penalty box.
It's very near. And two Michael Winterbottom movies, Wonderland and 24 Hour Party People. Wonderland, a great little film about a dysfunctional family, but just Winterbottom, a favorite director of mine, does a really nice job with this ensemble cast.
Well, I have to say, this one was really hard for me. There are some movies I left out of this list that I really can't believe I left out, but my 6 through 10, Woody Allen's got to appear on here. I feel bad about it, but Hannah and Her Sisters and Crimes and Misdemeanors, both films that tell multiple storylines that converge very nicely. Michael Caine, Barbara Hershey, Mia Farrow, everybody, Woody Allen in the first one, and then, of course, Crimes and Misdemeanors, you've got Woody Allen, Alan Alda, Martin Landau, just a great cast, Sam Waterston. I've also got on here, I'm a little bit surprised that I did decide to include this because it's not a film that I really adore, but I like a lot, and it's just perfect for this top five, and that's The Big Chill. I mean, this is a movie where you've got, it's baby boomer nostalgia. These are my parents' age people reliving kind of their memories, getting back together from college, and yet I'm a child of baby boomers, and I find that when I watch the movie now, I actually relate to it quite a bit, where these people are, because they're at in their lives about where, you know, we're getting to that point, Sam, to be about where these people are.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the Procol Harum, you can feel it. It's coming up.
Well, but that was Marvin Gaye, actually. But
no, I know, but my favorite song from that soundtrack is the Procol Harum. Right, so Tom Berenger, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, Kevin Kline, Mary Kay Place, Meg Tilly, Jo Beth Williams. It goes on and on. I also threw in here the ultimate guy movie, Diner. I mean, Kevin Bacon, Mickey Rourke, Barry Levinson film, Ellen Barkin's great in it, Daniel Stern's great in it, even Steve Guttenberg is fun to watch.
Yeah.
My other pick here, my 6 through 10, it missed the top 5, Sam, but I did it just to annoy you, The Usual Suspects.
You didn't.
How can you not love a film? Kevin Pollak, Shining.
Kevin, I love how you started with Kevin Pollak. Well, I mean, it's a great movie because Kevin Pollak did it, clearly.
I'm making my point. Yes. When you've got Stephen Baldwin and Kevin Pollak and all these people who really aren't big stars being really good.
In a really mediocre film, right.
Yes, exactly. But in a really good film, because as a part of the ensemble with that big cast, it works really well. And and you can only think of that movie as an ensemble movie, even though Gabriel Byrne is kind of the star of it. I think of it that way. And lastly, a film that you had a film on there, a pairing that only you seem to love. Well, this is another one that only I seem to love.
I hate the set. It's a nightmare. A brilliant idea, poorly executed.
I've always said the play would work better on a bare stage.
Actually, Holly said that.
No, I said it.
No,
first.
You didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you
yes,
didn't.
I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, fine, course, Jack. You win. You got the biggest creative dick. Okay.
Cure.
That's Angus McFadden as Orson Welles and Cary Elwes playing John Houseman from Tim Robbins' Cradle Will Rock. And you've got a huge cast here of Hank Azaria. Both the Cusacks are in it. Philip Baker Hall, Bill Murray, Cherry Jones. As I mentioned, Cary Elwes. It's a great cast, a phenomenal movie, a really inspirational movie, I think. But again, I seem to be kind of alone on this. So anyway, that's
your passion
my list.
For it has made me want to revisit it.
You should.
I will say that much.
You should.
All right. Well, those are the movies that just missed our cut. Tune in Friday to hear our top five. Please send any feedback to feedback@filmspotting.net or give us a call at 206-203-CINE. That's 206-203-2463 and leave a message. Check out our top five archive, a calendar of upcoming reviews, and more at filmspotting.net, and please help us reach new listeners by voting for us at Podcast Alley. A direct link is available on our blog under Vote for Film Spotting. Also on our blog, sign up for the Dope Sheet, the Film Spotting weekly email blast. Each week we'll give away a copy of the self-titled CD from Keith Jenkins and the Moving Parts to one random Dope Sheet subscriber. You can hear Keith on Film Spotting number 101, courtesy of Reverbose Records. This week's winner is Ben Murphy. Email us at feedback@filmspotting.net to claim your prize.
On Friday's show, our Herzog-Kinski Marathon continues with Herzog's 1979 adaptation of George Buchner's Wojciech, plus your top five chick flicks feedback and our top five ensemble movies. Thanks to Jude for today's music. Please check him out on the web at judemusic.com. For Film Spotting, I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Sam Holgren. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is presented by PeerFlix. Swap the DVDs you have for the ones you really want at peerflix.com/filmspotting. And also by Honda Fit. The all-new Honda Fit is small on the outside, yet roomy and versatile on the inside. A VTEC engine, anti-lock braking system, and front side and side curtain airbags are standard. And for added style, there's the Fit Sport Automatic with rear roofline spoiler and wheel-mounted paddle shifters. The Honda Fit is set and ready to go. Check it out at fit.honda.com.